Hey, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for my favorite hour of the week. It's All About Food. I'm so glad you're here with me now or whenever you're listening to this program. Thank you so much for caring about food and all life on Earth, really, because that's what we talk about here on this program. This is the last week of the current president administration here in the United States, and Friday will be a transition. And hoping to see you well on the other side. For many of you, I know you're experiencing a lot of stress, a lot of fear, a lot of discomfort. And one of my messages has always been that we can only control ourselves and what's going on in our own lives. And that's why what I will be talking about with my guest today is so important. And it has to do with detoxing. And there is a lot to cover when we're talking about detoxing. It is a very, very broad subject, as you will come to find out in a moment. I'm going to bring on my guest, Dr. Minich, who is a functional nutritionist and mind-body medicine health expert and author of the book Whole Detox. Now, before I bring you on, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing your name all right. Is it Deanna or Dina Minich?
Hi, it's Deanna Minich.
Okay, hi. Thanks for coming on.
So good to be with you here.
All good things come to those who wait. And I tried to get you on this program for many months and due to scheduling and traveling and all kinds of things on both ends, we're finally here together.
Here we are in the perfect moment.
It is. It truly is, because not just because it's the beginning of the year when everybody's saying, oh, I have to diet and I have to change and I have to do this. This is a very, very challenging time for many people.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Just like you were just talking about. I mean, I think when life events occur as they do, especially on the global or even national level, it gets us to look at all different aspects of our lives. And I like what you said about the only thing we can control is ourselves. And that is something I truly believe too. You know, when we see the need for change on the outside, it usually means we need to start shifting something on the inside.
Absolutely. And it can be very frustrating with all the clickbait going on, with all the articles, and it's important to know what's going on. But so many of them really get our fear level very high. And there really is so much that we can do. I'm glad that there are so many protests going on, and I'm glad people are becoming less complacent. You know, it's really nice to have, if you work for a business, you have employees that you trust, that you can let go and do the job you want them to do. It's wonderful if we had a government that we could trust, but governments have always been corrupt. And whether they're more or less corrupt depends on the time. There's only so much that we can do. So let's talk about what we can do as individuals. And we're going to be talking about detoxing. So to begin with, let's explain, or you explain, because you're the expert, what does detox mean to you as well as to many other people?
Yeah, and you know, I take a very non-traditional approach to detox. I'm not even a huge fan of how detox as a word has been played in society. It's not something that I'm accustomed to doing or even do with other people. Typically, when people think of a detox, it could be anything from drug and alcohol detox and kind of the standard sense of how that was really created for mainstream. It can also mean something more nutritionally based. So typically, there is some kind of fasting or juice cleanse or some type of protocol that involves stringent means and using particular foods in order to get rid of things in the body that aren't good for the body. So that's kind of the different meanings of detox that are currently out there. And the way that I see a detox is it's a way to remove any obstacles to your perfect health, whatever that may mean for you. So it sometimes is not just nutritional. I define toxin in a very broad sense. So to me, something toxic is everything from a toxic meal full of GMOs, genetically modified organisms, or food that is just nutrient poor, so it doesn't add anything, maybe fast food, processed food. But it can also be negative thinking. It can also be emotional baggage. It could also be being in a job that just feels like it's sucking your soul. So there can be so many different ways that we feel our own cellular vitality being drained. And I don't see us as just a physical body. You know, we have those emotions, we have thoughts, and all of those things really do play into our health and healing process.
You were talking in your book about the biochemistry of the body. And this is another case where, you know, the head bone's connected to the, everything's connected, and there's a lot of chemistry going on in our bodies, and our thoughts create the chemical reactions, the chemicals that we excrete or in different situations, and some of them can be toxic to us, right?
Oh, absolutely. So let's just take the example of going to a movie, going to maybe a scary movie or an adventurous drama thriller type movie. You're sitting in your chair. You're not doing anything. You're not actually engaging in anything physical, but you're watching this and you're receiving all kinds of emotional and mental inputs, and your body's responding, even though you're not moving. You're just static in that chair. And so watching these images on the screen are potentially changing your heart rate, your blood pressure, the amount of stress hormone that's floating through your bloodstream in that moment. And maybe those images that you see in the movie have such staying power that you have a nightmare that night, or you can't sleep very well. And maybe that movie, I'm sure that we've all seen movies like this, I know I have, where it kind of stays with you for an extended period of time, and it really does have a mental, emotional impact. So what the science tells us is that there truly is no real division between the body and the mind and emotions. It's all part of the same web. And we know this from the research studies that have been done, groups at Harvard, Johns Hopkins, a lot of the big, very reputable universities are now actually doing research on this. And there are even journals, scientific and medical journals, exploring what we call psychosomatic medicine. In other words, the placebo effect. You know, if you think that something is good for you and you do it, chances are it's going to have a benefit. And if you think something is bad for you, then chances are it's going to be somehow negative and not having that same benefit. So it's a real thing.
Yeah, I like to tell people who are struggling with diet and want to do better, which is most people, that in the moment when you're eating and putting something in your mouth, that's not the time to have a conversation with yourself about how bad you're doing. That's the time to say, accept whatever food I'm eating, take the good, let the rest go, because of that placebo effect.
Yeah.
You could make a food that's not good for you even worse.
Oh, I completely agree. I've seen that over and over, and it creates lasting stress. You know, and that ramps up, again, all of the stress hormones, and then that throws everything in a tizzy, so you can't actually even digest the food. So I do think, and not to say that ignorance is bliss and that we should stay within the realm of just not knowing about certain ways of eating and the effects on our body. I think it really just involves awareness, people really being in touch with their bodies, their thoughts. You know, we get so fixated on food, and I know that I'm one of those people. You know, I have a PhD and a master's in nutrition. I've studied food all my life. But now I'm also seeing that it's not just about what we eat, it's about how we eat. It's about how aware we are of our bodies. There's so much more to health than just food. And I know it's strange for a nutritionist to say that, but it's really what I have seen to be the case.
You know, the name of this show is called It's All About Food. And
right.
I take that many ways on this program because so many things are related to food that we don't realize are even food, politics and all kinds of things. But there's more to the food that we eat, and there's more to our health than what we put in our bodies as nutrition. I know in my own personal life, some of my friends, colleagues, family who eat really, really well, but because emotionally they are a mess, their health suffers.
Yeah. You know, and I've even talked about this in the whole detox book, that we could be having the best, most nutritious meal in front of us, but if we have a mind full of toxic thoughts, negative beliefs, and different perspectives on ourselves that are not good for our health, then, you know, that's only a fraction of it. I think that we'll see greater synergy if we put it all together into a more holistic picture for ourselves. And, you know, I do like food as an entry point, because food is the thing that we can easily change. It's not so easy to change our thoughts. It's not so easy to change our emotions. But what I'd like to guide people into doing is moving through 7 different ways to do it. And food is first and foremost. I definitely think we need that good foundation. It primes our mood. It primes our behavior. It changes all of our decisions within a day, just how we eat. So we have to be there front and center. But many people, they continue to stick with food and continue to look for a solution when they've exhausted everything. And then I start moving them into looking at their thoughts, looking at their emotions like they would an ingredient label. You know, we don't have that same discernment when it comes to how we think about things. So it's good that we're getting educated on food. That's, again, it's the first building block in what I see as a sequence of steps to optimal health. And we really need to, and it's something that we're always, always, always engaged with eating. So it is important.
Okay, you have the 7 systems of health, and I want to touch on them lightly, which you go into great detail in your book. You name them root, flow, fire, love, truth, insight, and spirit. Now, those correspond to 7 chakras, correct?
Well, they do in a matter of speaking, and that was one of my first points of inspiration. But then I went further into fleshing them out a bit more, into looking at lifestyle and foods. And, you know, I made it a bit more complex than I would say the chakra system. I really got deeper into that, including the color. According to even scientific lingo and studies, you know, what do these colors, these associations mean? So I was a yoga teacher and was trained in yoga. I've been doing yoga for a couple of decades now. And so when I learned about the chakra system, I thought, that's a great framework to start basing everything else upon, because it's very complete. Because I don't even think that we're just body, mind, and spirit. I think we've got several layers to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did leverage and use the chakra system as the basis for going further into the 7 systems of health.
Okay. Let's start with the root. And I just want to share a funny story, not exactly related, but kind of. A friend of mine, I'm traveling. I'm in California. I live in New York, and we're doing some musical theater projects here in California. We're directing Fiddler on the Roof, my partner and I. And the producer made us some what she called gypsy soup. And it had a lot of root vegetables. It had a lot of root vegetables in it. And my partner's nephew came down, Kyle, and he's a typical young adult, not really interested in food and health and whatever, but was hungry. And we were feeding him salad and the soup, and he said, the soup tastes like dirt.
That's common. I hear that from kids a lot.
And I was saying, because it's from the ground,
yeah,
from the roots, from the minerals.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that foundation, the root, that dirt.
So the way that I look at the 7 systems of health is I look at them in relationship to 4 different things in our lives. So the first thing about the root is I look at the body parts. And then the second thing I look at is the psychology. The third thing I look at is the lifestyle. And then the fourth thing I look at is food. So it's all kind of related. So yes, you are talking about the elements of food. So I'll jump there for the root. So the root is, I associate it with the color red. And the color red is appropriate because if you look at the science of color, red evokes a response. And so the root system is at our foundational level, how we respond to stress. It's fight or flight. It's survival. It's really making our way in this physical world. So the foods that are going to feed us at that level, and, you know, I look at food in a variety of ways. Yes, I look at it biochemically and supporting us with certain nutrients. I also take more of an ancient traditional way of looking at foods in terms of its properties. So things that help us to stabilize and feel secure and safe in who we are as a physical being are going to be things that are high in protein. So protein stabilizes us. Most of our structure, the things that give us structure, like our skin, our immune system, our skeleton, these types of things are made of protein and minerals. And so when we eat those foods, we fortify the systems in the body that give us strength, that give us that sense of security. So the root vegetables, I talk about those within Whole Detox because indeed they do grow within the earth. They do have higher amounts of minerals and things like certain fibers that allow us to eliminate properly, which is also part of this root system. And so, you know, think about it. I mean, what could really help to support our earth type of element system within us other than something that grows in the earth? So root vegetables, they give us that sense of being grounded. And even if we think of fall, when we tend to have more of those root vegetables, we're tending to go more within, and we choose those root vegetables. They tend to act more as warming foods, stabilizing foods, and that kind of gives us that cozy feeling to really anchor and hunker down into our physical bodies.
One thing I wanted to thank you for, I'm personally a vegan, and I promote a plant-based diet, and you have meal plans for all of the seven systems that feature the seven systems, and you have recipes for omnivores and for vegans. So nobody's at a loss here if you want to eat a certain way, and I appreciate that focus.
Just through my study, I mean, I've gone through, gosh, so many different ways of eating myself and, vegan, raw foodist, omnivore, paleo, I mean, the whole thing. And I've now come to the point that I really do think that the nutrition of the 21st century is personalized nutrition. The more I get into nutrigenomics, the more I work with people and see preferences and what makes them feel happy. I do think that there's room for everybody. I do think that we need more unity when it comes to eating rather than division and categorization. So, yeah, what I'm trying to do with Whole Detox is give people options. And it's definitely not wedded to any dietary dogma. I try to steer clear of that and just focus on the person and whatever they feel good with.
Well, I hope unity and less division is the theme for the 21st century because we need a lot of that, not just related to food and diet.
We do.
Oh, good goodness. Now, you have these questions for each system for people to answer to see if one or more of these systems needs some detoxing or some assistance. Now, what happens when you're answering these questions and some of the ones you answer are relative to an underactive part of the system and some are overactive part of the system? How are those balanced out? Because, you know, we're all individuals, right? And we're all a little nutty. So...
So, there's a questionnaire in the book that I call the spectrum quiz because, again, I do believe in personalization, and I don't think that every detox should be the same for every person. And, in fact, I have people that go through the program over and over again, and each time they do it, they might take it in a little bit of a different way, which is appropriate because we're in a different place. So when you do the questionnaire, what you look for there is the thing that's most out of whack. So out of the seven, what thing comes to the top here? I don't really get people too focused on, okay, is it underactive? Is it overactive? I'm just looking for general imbalance because if something's out of balance, chances are it goes from overactive and underactive, and there's probably a dynamic tension between the two. So What I tend to see, I've done some research on this where we've collected the data from people that have taken the questionnaire. And I think at the time, we did this about a year ago where we looked at the data for 2,200 people. And we saw that essentially people have a huge, a majority of their issues in two particular systems. Number one was the FIRE system, which is all about digestion and work-life balance. So really, that's no surprise. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was the ROOT system, which we've been talking about. And the ROOT is all about goodness. You know, it's a lot of different body systems and a sense of identity, a sense of having a community, a sense of being rooted in the physical world, which a lot of people have a lot of fear around. So those two systems seem to be relatively more out of balance than most for most people. And of course, most of the people that work with me are in the United States. I do have some folks in the international areas and on different continents, but this is very reflective of our society at large. You know, the root, we don't feel stable, we don't feel safe, we don't feel secure. And the fire, we're working way too hard and we don't have proper balance between having joy and having work. It's almost like we have no division between the two anymore. So that's where people tend to, we tend to see health issues in those two arenas specifically.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I was, I had your book opened up to the underactive love and overactive love, and you give some real good examples of different people who, what their lifestyle is like and what your diagnosis it turns out to be.
I meet somebody and basically tell what's going on for them. You know, I meet them, especially seeing them in person, I can observe a lot physically. And then I hear how they talk. I hear what they talk about. I might even share a meal with them and I get more information. I can basically size them up as one of, oftentimes, we carry each of these seven systems, but there's one that could be dominant, and we carry kind of a personality around that. So, yeah, the profiles in the book help you to discern what personality type are you, because there are strengths and weaknesses or challenges, you know, opportunities for growth for each of those. You know, a fire type, let's just go with that one for a second. You know, the brilliance of the fire type is the entrepreneur. The one who just, it's almost like the Midas touch where, and it's, you know, this is the color yellow anyway. So this is about, you know, they have an idea, they carry it through, they make it successful, it helps people, they feel good. There's abundance and, you know, maybe it's just abundance of just even ideas. So that person is really in alignment with their fire. Now the dysfunctional fire type is the type that's enslaved to their day-to-day. They're working at the computer. Their body is hunched over. They have digestive issues. They forget to eat. And when they eat, they're eating lots of sugary snacks to give them energy because they don't have any energy. Their fire's out. So they're not digesting. So, yeah, there's this polarity. And you can imagine that entrepreneur can easily become the workaholic. So there's a fine line and a spectrum that runs between each of these systems when we start looking at these more psychologically in terms of personalities.
You've probably heard of these products. There's a few startups that are coming up with these food products to help these overstressed entrepreneurs not have to focus on eating. They're like these drinks that are supposed to have all the nutrients. I mean, they're a disaster. I can't even imagine that they can nourish these people, because I've read some of the ingredients and, you know, they're not made with whole foods and they're just like a select bunch of nutrients. Disaster. Those entrepreneurs will need the whole detox. Now, what happens? This is a 21-day personalized program, as you say, to break through barriers in every area of your life. What happens on day 22?
So we continue the program actually a little bit beyond that. So the action steps of seven things per day is that 21 days. But then that final week of the program, if you're doing this online with me, and if you're not doing it online with me, you can check out, I believe it's chapter 12 in the book where it's Whole Detox for Life. and I talk about the different things that you can do. So, you know, I believe in small steps to make huge changes. And so in that final week after we're actually done with the 21-day program, I ask everybody the most important question, which is, what is the one thing? What is the one thing you're going to take from all the different things that you've just been exposed to? And how are you going to carry that into your life? Maybe it's just eating more colorful foods. Maybe it's just getting a little bit more activity per day. Maybe it's taking a nap twice a week. Maybe it's being on the phone with a friend one time a week on Sunday. You know, I just want people to commit to one small thing based on what they've experienced, because obviously it's just too high of a bar to say that you're going to continue this program. And the program's not intended to be, carried on over and, you know, just throughout every, I mean, you certainly could do that, but I really want to create a new template. And we know that every 21 days or so, you can create a new habit. And that's really what I'm looking for, is power of the small. Because, of course, the science, as we were talking about earlier on in the show, if we can change our thoughts, we're going to change our decisions. We're going to change our actions. We're going to change our behavior. We're going to change our food choices. So if I can change one thought pattern in somebody, it's as relevant as somebody trying to make a dietary change and just trying to get more vegetables in every meal. That's how I see it. So that's what I strive for with everybody that works on the Whole Detox program, is what's the one thing? What's the small change that's going to make the big difference?
I think, too, when you acknowledge one thing and you make that change, it's a sense of accomplishment that will inspire you to go further, perhaps, in your next cycle.
That's right. That is absolutely right. And in fact, even the people that come back and do Whole Detox, they talk about what they signed up for and what they committed to, and now they're ready to go onto the next rung of the spiral of change. But I think, again, if we have something that's too high, too insurmountable, mm-hmm. I like to offer that buffet, and then people can choose. You know, not everything's going to resonate with everybody. No. So that's why having options is good.
Yeah, especially when your fire is out. You can't imagine just biting off this huge mountain in front of you of change. So small steps can definitely be inspirational and lead you in the long term to excellent health.
Well said. Good. That's right.
Well, thank you for joining me, Dr. Deanna Minich, to talk about your book, Whole Detox, a 21-day personalized program to break through barriers in every area of your life. I enjoyed reading the book, and I enjoyed talking with you today.
Oh, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Okay, be well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Shall we take a little break? I think so. And then I'll be back to talk about more food-related topics. Hello, everyone. We're back. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food, Part 2 today. Let's continue a little bit on that topic of detoxing. You may remember, I think it was back in September, I did a discussion on detoxing, but I was talking about external detoxing of my apartment. And it's an ongoing project, just like we talked about a moment ago. Things happen best in small steps when they're manageable. It's hard to take on a giant project and accomplish it all in one weekend. So I started in September, and I had this idea of finishing in 1 month. That didn't happen. And as I said, the project is ongoing, but by the end of December, 3 months later, after tidying up the bedroom and using some of that Japanese folding strategies to neaten up drawers and shelves and getting rid of things and getting rid of some furniture, all kinds of things, and moving things around, putting some things on eBay, it was very time-consuming. By the end of December, I was feeling very happy in my home. So in September or in the summertime, we weren't home most of the summer, but when I was in the apartment, I felt all of this clutter. Now, some people are at peace in clutter. I am not one of them. I feel like when my exterior is cluttered, my mind is cluttered. I don't like that feeling. I like to know where everything is. I like my space to be welcoming for others to come and enjoy some time with us with a cup of tea or when we make a meal. And I like to be able to do that sort of thing, invite people over on spontaneous thought. And when everything is a mess and cluttered, it's harder to do that. Okay, so by the end of December, consistent work, nothing overwhelming, just little projects here and there. The home just felt so much better. And unfortunately, fortunately, we left early in January for California. We're here for at least 9 weeks. And I miss my home now because it was so cozy and lovely when I left. But when we get back, there'll be more things to do, more things to purge, more things to clear out, more things to set up and create a healthy system in my home environment. Stay tuned. And if any of you have started on that kind of journey, let me know how it's going for you. I love to share information like this. You can contact me, you know this, at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. Well, as I mentioned, we are in California, and this past week has been a wild, wet week. We're here in the South Bay, and right down the road where we were staying, some trees fell. There were live wires. We had a power outage early on Wednesday. The power was down until sometime on Thursday. And when you don't have electricity and you're not prepared not to have electricity, you really appreciate what electricity can do for you. And we had our computers were powered so we could do some work, but we had no Wi-Fi. And our cell phones had very limited cell signal because I'm sure that was all impacted due to the weather. Ooh, it was fun here with traffic and trees falling and mudslides. And the sun's been out a few days, and all of that seems to have been cleared up, but the rain is coming back. And I'm not complaining about the rain, of course, because California has been in a drought for some time, and these rains are bringing necessary water to this area. Everything has consequences. Good things come with bad things. But right now, things are good. And during this time, we didn't want to use the water because the water here is on a sump pump and we're on a lower level and we didn't want the water to back up on us and flood things. So we didn't want to do dishes. We could cook with gas, but we didn't want to have the dishes. And that's where my favorite real sesame corn thins came in handy. Have I praised them enough on this program? I'm just so glad that I have them, especially now here where we're staying in this pool house. We had some wonderful ripe avocados, and I haven't had avocados in a while because they haven't been in season where I've been, and now they are where we are. So that quick little meal, some fresh tomatoes, ripe avocados, and sesame corn thins held me over for a few days, which was wonderful. Now, the other thing I'm grateful for right now here in what is currently sunny California are fresh oranges. I want to talk about free food. I know some people that go nuts when they're at a buffet, all you can eat, and they get a deal, or they're at a place where samples are being offered, free food. If that free food isn't healthy. For example, if it's highly processed, made with sugar, oil, and salt. Personally, I don't care if it's free, because it's not free. It may not cost you anything to buy it or purchase it. Or if you're at a buffet that has a very nominal charge, eating a lot of what's offered may seem like a great deal. But what happens once it gets in your body? Serious costs. That's why I don't see that kind of free food as being beneficial. But the kind of free food that really excites me, and it excites me down to my DNA, to my soul, is fresh fruit growing on trees that you can have access to when you want to eat these foods. So fortunately, we have friends and family that have citrus trees around here, and we've been enjoying the fresh oranges and fresh lemons. There's something in there that not only excites me, I guess there's something in me that is distrustful of our society on the whole, and I'm getting more distrustful, especially with the administration that will be coming in on Friday, that there's no guarantee that we, those of us who can afford to eat healthy food, I'm not talking about people, unfortunately, who have food insecurity already, but those of us who are secure when it comes to food, I don't feel that true security that the food will always be there, be provided. And there's a part of me that really wants to have the opportunity to grow my own food so that I can have that security. And when I see food that's available on friends and family's properties that I have access to, that thrills me because it feels so much more nutritious from a soul point of view. So I get really excited, and I've been eating a lot of these wonderful fresh oranges. Okay, so we were talking about detox before, and like I said earlier in the program, it's January, and this is a time when people want to start over, develop new habits. Most people start a diet or some program in January, and it doesn't take many weeks before they fall off the wagon. There's plenty of data on this, and many of you, I'm sure, know and have seen this either with yourselves or people you care about. I've seen many, many Facebook posts of promises for this year. Now, for some people, making a commitment is not that difficult. I know when I want to do something, I get very digital about it. It's all or nothing for me. I don't do moderation at all. For being a vegan, I just don't see animal products as food, period, over. There was a time when I was eating all raw, and cooked food just wasn't on the menu. Done. That's who I am. Black, white, 1-0, off, on. But for many people, it's hard to make change or to stick to a plan. And so perhaps the Deanna Minich book, Whole Detox, might sound good to you, to not just change your eating habits, but incorporate everything else that is involved, because our emotions and our environment are connected to what we choose to eat every day and how we feel. But there are other plans out there. I just wanted to mention a couple because they keep coming up, and there's another round right now available. They are not for everyone. I just want to say that. But I've mentioned Susan Thompson's Bright Line Eating Program before. This is for people who really have an addiction to sugar, really have an addiction to sweet foods, unhealthy foods, and need a plan that is strict and rigid with regular videos and interaction that can keep you on your plan. This is not a plan that works for me. I'm not that kind of person, but for some of you that need this hand-holding, this might be good for you. And if you go to responsibleeatingandliving.com right now, the Food Freedom Series is live, and it's a reduced-cost program that's available. If you've checked it out before, there's a new program that costs less. So that's good news. And another one, for those of you who are thinking about eliminating dairy, you may remember that I spoke with two people on this program who had created this dairy detox program. And if you go to Responsibly Eating and Living, of course, you can listen to the interview in our archives. But they regularly launch their dairy detox program, and it is available now. You can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and click on the link for that. That's with Allison Rivers Sampson and Michelle Sen. And it's an easy program and just eases you into all the products and substitutions that are necessary to eliminate dairy from your life and do it in a way that's delicious and satisfying. So for those of you that have said, I can't give up cheese, yes, you can. And the Dairy Detox will help you do it. We also have great recipes at Responsible Eating and Living that help you do that as well. Okay, now, I want to mention some products that I've really been enjoying. So we're on the road, I mentioned. We're in California. We're staying in a pool house. We have very limited kitchen facilities. And you know me, my partner and I, Gary, we love to cook. We love to get down and dirty, create things from scratch. And it's hard to do that now. So it's a good opportunity to try some of the products that are out there. And we've been having some fun with some of them. Maybe you know some of them. We love big soups. And when we're at home in New York, we have this one Asian restaurant we like to go to, Green Zenfony, that has their big soups. They're like Vietnamese-style big noodle soups. Some come with noodles, some without. And here in San Jose, we love going to the Vegetarian House. They have some great big soups. My favorite one is the Flying Buddha, which is not a noodle soup. But it has all kinds of interesting vegetables and chewy things that are very satisfying. But we thought we would try and make some of these soups here at, quote, home in our pool house where we're staying. And because I don't like eating out all the time. I can't control everything. Can't control the salt or anything. And it's true when you buy processed foods as well. Some of these I'm going to be talking about next. There's a limit to what you can control. But I still want to mention some of the ones we found and why I like them. Ancient Harvest has a corn quinoa spaghetti. It's gluten-free. And it's great. We just put it in our noodle soup recently and really enjoyed it. So there's that, especially for those who are looking to eliminate gluten or keep it low. And another gluten-free product that I really love, not necessarily from a health standpoint, but from an environment and an animal standpoint, are the Sophie's Kitchen Vegan Seafood Project. Product. So I spoke with the founder, Eugene Wang, earlier last year, and we talked about Sophie's Kitchen Vegan Seafood. He named it after his daughter, Sophie. And we found some in the freezer case at the grocery store, and I thought, oh, let's buy some. We can put some in our big soups. And we got the Sophie's Kitchen Vegan Coconut Shrimp. I want to read to you the ingredients. Water. Konjac powder, and we talked about konjac powder on the program when I interviewed Eugene Wang. It's a starch from a vegetable, and he was telling me it was difficult to get it here in the United States, and he imports it, and I'm hoping that there are some entrepreneurs out there that are thinking about growing konjac here in the United States because it's a fascinating vegetable and we can do a lot of things with it in the 21st century when we are disrupting the food system and taking foods that people are used to eating that come from animals and making them with plant foods. Because you can now make shrimp from plants. And that's what we got. We got their vegan coconut shrimp. It's got the konjac powder, pea starch, potato starch, coconut powder, rice flakes, canola oil, paprika, fenugreek, organic agave nectar, sea salt, turmeric, white pepper, alginate from seaweed, and calcium hydroxide. It's a processed food, no doubt. It's high in starch, no doubt. But it's a much better product than the high cholesterol shrimp that is grown in shrimp farms today that are devastating for people's health and devastating for the environment. And this stuff is good. It's really good. Another product that we really got excited about to put in our soup is the Field Roast Deli Slices. They are tomato-based. They're made with water and wheat gluten. This is not a gluten-free product, but they have tomato paste, some safflower oil, red wine, garlic, barley malt, yeast extract, paprika, sea salt, granulated garlic, lentils, organic wheat flakes, whole wheat powder, Irish moss, which is a sea vegetable, yellow pea flour, spices, natural liquid smoke, and mustard powder. Again, this is a processed food, but it is not as highly processed as some of the other veggie deli slices out on the market, and it's much, much healthier than eating actual cold cuts made from animal flesh. It's better for the environment, and they're fun. I'm not saying this is something that I want to eat on a regular basis, but, you know, we took just one slice and cut it up and put little bits in our big soup, and it was fun and tasty. Now, the other thing that we did was purchase some low-sodium vegetable broth, and I want to stop for a minute and talk about low-sodium. So you may know this rule of thumb, that when you're looking for a low-sodium product, you look at the number of calories on the label for the serving, and the number of milligrams in sodium should be the same or less. If they're more, you have a high-sodium product. So I'm looking at this vegetable broth, which is a low-sodium broth, and in a one-cup serving, it has 10 calories, that's like nothing, and 120 milligrams of sodium. Now that's a lot, especially for my rule of thumb. But then I'm thinking, it's not so bad because we use that vegetable broth, we add a lot of vegetables to it, and the calories will go up, but the sodium won't go up by very much. And since I don't salt my food normally, if I'm having 2 cups of this, 240 milligrams of sodium is not a lot. It doesn't taste like a very salty broth, like a salty soup, so I'm not too worried about it. Keep in mind, a teaspoon of salt is 2,300 milligrams. And the recommendation, depending on who you talk to, the more conservative, those who don't like salt, recommend around 1,500 milligrams. Some go up to 2,300. So 240 milligrams for a big pot of soup as a serving, I'm not too concerned about. And it's tasty and good for us here in our little pool house. Another thing we've been enjoying, and I have a confession because this is kind of a little treat. There's a candy that I actually like. I'm not promoting candy. I don't like to eat a lot of candy. Occasionally we have little squares of dark chocolate, for example, which is with a high percentage of cocoa and very little sugar. But there's a candy we discovered by ginger people called Ginger Chews. It's made with sugar, ginger, and tapioca. And when you chew it, it gets hot from the ginger. Spectacular. I have been indulging a little bit with an occasional ginger chew. That's my confession for the day. And those are some of the products that we've been enjoying while on the road. I have to say, I am not ready for Friday. I am not ready for Friday. I am not ready for the transition. I am not ready for that guy who is going to become president of the United States. It's adding to my fear. It's adding to my stress. There's all this talk about repealing the Affordable Health Care Act. And I never said the Affordable Health Care Act was perfect, and it definitely needs improvement, but it is a very good step in the right direction. I personally would love single payer health care system where everyone in the United States has health care. but we have a long way to go, and it seems like we will be going backwards. So this is all the more reason, my friends, to stay healthy, to eat well. There's a lot of stress going on in our lives, more in my life, and I'm allowing more in caring about what's happening with our country and the world. And I feel like we're being played in a way where the media, in some ways, I think they're doing a better job than they were doing. In some ways, not. I wish the corruption could be uncovered and then things could be done. And we read things and we wonder, why aren't people being arrested or being tried for things that are being uncovered? What's happening? Feels like our foundation is going out from under us. It's a scary time. Excuse me. I'm getting all choked up just talking about it. So that's all the more reason to stay healthy. And I do recommend a dose of regular meditation to keep all of the little soldiers in your body, those 50 to 100 trillion cells that are part of your personal life system, give them the good message that it's important to stay strong, stay well, take the nutrition from the good food you're sending it, and let the stress go. It's not a good time to indulge in fear. We all need to stay strong in order to move in a forward direction. I acknowledge that there's been exploitation and violence and inequality probably ever since time began. And I'm not saying that it hasn't existed here in this country. It absolutely has. I'm an activist, and I've been working, supporting the voiceless, the non-human animals who are exploited in the millions every day for food and for other things. We can only do so many things in our own personal lives and picking something that we want to work and fight for. I just feel like we're going to go backwards, and that's what feels so destabilizing, at least for me. In the last few decades, we've made progress with civil rights. We've made progress with women's rights, and I don't want to go backwards. Now, there are little bits and snippets of good news. You've probably heard them. For example, Ringling Brothers, the circus, says they're done as of the middle of this year, at the end of their season. The animal rights activists have been working hard at this for decades. I've participated in numerous protests, and finally, their sales are down. People are getting the message that the animals that they've been using have been exploited, and they don't want to support it. Interesting, if you read the history about the Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Circus, the Barnum himself was someone who was one of the early promoters of fake news. All those stories that they used to show at the circus, these exploited people that they used with these incredible stories around them, and people would like to come and gape and wide-eyed, listen to these stories and look at these people. I don't think they have a very good history, and I'm glad they're coming to an end. And another great little tidbit of news, it's just the beginning, a move in the right direction. And that's thanks to animal rights activists all over the world. This is in France, actually. The French Assembly voted to require cameras in slaughterhouses in 2018. When I lived in France from 1992 to 96, I never met another vegan, and I rarely met another vegetarian. So this is huge news to me, and I'm grateful for that. Okay, it looks like I've chatted my way through another hour. I wanted you to remember to visit my blog, What Vegans Eat. I've got some fun conversations and pictures and delicious things that I've been involved with all during the week. I hope you check that out. And next week, we've got a great show. I hope you will join me then. We'll be talking about figs and the Trump Survival Guide. So join me next week. And in the meantime, have a delicious week.